And we're holding on Samach Amud Bey's fourth line from the bottom. We ended off yesterday talking about different things where if a woman eats them while she's nursing, then they may affect her milk supply. They may cause her milk to dry up. They may cause it to change consistency and not be so good for the baby. So now in that connection, then the Gemara digresses to tell us about a number of things where if a woman does certain things when she's conceiving the baby or when she's carrying the baby, then those will also have an effect on it. On the face of it, it seems a little hard as we'll go through these things to see what the logical reason behind them is. And in fact, Ben Yehoyada says that they may have only applied in those times when people were of stronger constitutions. But whatever the case, the Gemara lists them. We can learn from them whatever we can learn from them. So the Gemara says, "D'mishamsha beirechaya." If a woman has relations with her husband in a place in the building where you have millstones where you grind grain, havala bani nichbi, then she's going to have from if she becomes pregnant from that, she's going to have children who are prone to epilepsy. "D'mishamsha al ara," if they have relations on the ground, havala bani shamuti, then she's going to have children who have long necks, extra long necks, which is considered a mum. "D'dorcha al roma d'chamra," if during her pregnancy she steps on or maybe over the roma, which means the excrement of a donkey, or the different deer said dama d'chamra, which means the blood of a donkey, havala boni gyudani, then she'll have children who are gyudani, which Rashi says two possibilities. Either it means people whose hair falls out easily, or people who have eczema, or other or kids who have eczema, or other kinds of skin problems like that. Da'ochla chardala, if during the pregnancy she eats mustard, havala bani zalzaloni, then she's going to have children who are very who are always hungry, who are gluttonous, who have big appetites. Da'ochla tachli, if she eats cress during her pregnancy, havala bani dulfani, she'll have children whose eyes are always watering. Da'ochla munini, if she eats small fish. And here, unlike all the other ones, it actually makes a point of saying hurgala, she's in the habit of eating dogim ktanim, small fish. So it sounds like with all the other ones, it sounds like Rashi is learning that even eating them one time or doing these things one time can have a bad effect on the baby, as opposed to with these small fish, it would only be if she's habitually eating them during the pregnancy. Anyway, havon la bani mitzitzi eina. If she does that, then she'll have children if she has that during her pregnancy, then she'll have children who have mitzitze eina. Rashi says it means that their eyes are always fluttering and moving around a lot. On the side of here, it brings from Maseres Tashas, means that they have small eyes. Next, da'ochla gargushta, if during the pregnancy she eats clay, and we talked about at the end yesterday that there are certain kinds of clays or earths that have minerals in them, and back then they used to sometimes eat them for medicinal purposes if a person is low on that particular mineral. But if she does that during her pregnancy, havala bani mechu'ari, then she'll have children who are ugly. D'shasya shichra, and if she drinks beer during the pregnancy, havala bani uchmi, then she'll have children who are dark-skinned. Actually, there's even a different Gemara that says it's not just in the case of beer, it's not just her. If the father also drinks beer a lot, then it causes that the children that he fathers are going to be darker skin than they otherwise would be. So again, I mean, the logic behind a lot of these things is a little hard to follow. I mean, in a general way, of course, we know that whatever a woman eats during her pregnancy has an effect on the baby. So the Gemara is mentioning these particular things. You could say, you know, the Gemara wants, after all, you know, a Jewish kid should be born with all the best possible advantages. So therefore, the Gemara took the time to mention these things in order to warn an expectant mother what to be careful of, in order that her child shouldn't have these various handicaps. So now the Gemara starts mentioning, on the other hand, positive things. De'ochla bisra b'shasya chamra, if she eats meat and drinks wine during the pregnancy, havala boni bari, then she'll have children who are very healthy. De'ochla behi, if she eats eggs during the pregnancy, havala boni enoni, then she'll have children who have big eyes, which looks nicer, rather than before we said mitzitzi, and according to the Aruch, meant that they have small eyes. Now it's the opposite. They'll have eyes that are bigger and look more attractive. the ochla kavri, if she eats fish, and here kavri means specifically larger fish, havala boni chinoni, then she'll have children who are graceful. You know, that we find there's an association between fish and grace. We find that Ephraim and Menashe are compared to fish. And the bracha for Yosef is Ben Kodas Yosef, that which among other things means Yosef is a graceful son. So there's that connection. Next, the ochla karpasa, if she eats parsley or whatever exact vegetable karpas is during the pregnancy, havala boni zibisoni, then she'll have children who are. She'll have children who are radiant, that their skin and their face is radiant and beautiful. The ochla kusbarta, if she eats coriander or cilantro, havala boni bisarni, then she'll have children who are fat, which back then being fat was considered something attractive. The ochla esroiga, and if she eats esrog during the pregnancy, havala boni richoni, then she'll have children who are fragrant. And in fact, the Gemara says, Brate the Shabu Malka. For example, you have the daughter of Shabu Malka. Shabu Malka was the name of a couple of the kings of Persia who in those days who also ruled over Babel. There were three kings recorded in history by that name. Generally speaking, the Gemara, when it refers to them, is referring either to the first one who lived in the time of Shmuel or the second one who lived in the time of Rava. Anyway, so his daughter, Ochla Ba'ima Esroiga, her mother ate Esrog while she was pregnant with her, and she was so fragrant, when they brought her to her father, they would bring her at the head of all of his fragrances. In other words, like she was the most fragrant of all. So Ben Yehoyada says, maybe it doesn't mean her body was so fragrant, maybe it means that her breath was extra sweet. He says that the fact is it could also be a guzma. The point being, in other words, that her mother ate a sregim and that had a good effect on her. Okay, now getting back to the question, now getting back to matters of nursing. So we discussed before that, so we started by saying in the Mishnah that one of the things that a woman is obligated to do for her husband is that if she has a baby, she has to nurse the baby rather than telling her husband, I want to get a wet nurse. We talked about what happens if her husband dies, what happens if they get divorced, and all the dinim in that. So now, continuing on that topic, Omer Rav Huna, Bodik one Rav Huna Bar Chinina. So Rav Huna says that Rav Huna Bar Chinina tested us on the following din. Suppose that he emeris lahonik v'hu emes shaloi lahonik. Suppose that she wants to nurse the baby, and her husband doesn't want her to, because he says, if you nurse the baby, that's going to make you less attractive. So he wants to hire a wet nurse. So there's no question, shomin la, there's no question, we listen to her, and we say she has every right to nurse the baby, tsara didahu, because after all, it's her pain otherwise, because she suffers from the extra milk in her breasts. So she's entitled to nurse, even if her husband doesn't like the idea. But the question, and there's different other explanations that Rishonim have. It can mean it's a tsar of hers to be separated from her baby. Anyway, what about the other way around? Hu oma lahonik v'hi emeris shaloi lahonik. What if the husband wants her to nurse, but she doesn't want to because it's not usual in her family? Well, that's what we're going to say. So why doesn't she want to nurse? One possibility is she may not want to nurse because in her family, in her birth family that she grew up in, the women didn't usually nurse their own babies. Instead, they would hire wet nurses. So then, mahu. So then, what would be the din? So and the question is, kol hecha delav ocha. Now, there's no question if that's because in her family, they didn't do that. Her family is well-to-do. They're upper class, and therefore they didn't generally nurse their own babies. They would give them to wet nurses. Then there's no question, shame in law, then we would definitely listen to her and say that she doesn't have to go downward in social status if in her birth family, they didn't used to do that, then we can't require her to leave. But the question is, he urcha, he lav urcha, who lav urcha. What if in her family it was the usual thing to do, but in his family, the women don't usually do that? My, so now what do we say? If she says, I want to be like the other men, like the other women in your family, they don't nurse, I shouldn't be required to either. So the question is, Bosu di Deas Linen, O Bosu di Das Linen. So do we follow his family where they don't usually do it and therefore we can't require her to either? Or do we go according to her family and in her family they usually do and therefore the husband can tell her, tough luck, you have to, because that's how it was in the family you grew up in. So that was the question. And Rav Huna says, Uposhitna le meha. We answered that on the basis of a statement that we learned earlier in the Masechta, Oilo imay ve'edi yeredes imay. The wife always goes up with the husband in social status and in status as far as the various other things that she's entitled to, for example, in terms of the amount of food and the type of food and the clothing and so forth that she's entitled to her husband. All of that, she goes up with him. In other words, if she came from a lower class family and he's from a higher class one, then he has to support her in the style that his family does. But any yeredes imo, she doesn't go down with him. The other way around, if she comes from a higher class family and he from a lower class one, then she doesn't have to go downward in status with him. Instead, he has to continue supporting her in the style that she was accustomed to. So therefore, that would answer the question over here. In this case, where in her family, they usually do nurse, which is usually the kind of thing that poor women do because they can't afford a wet nurse, as opposed to in his family, they're richer and they can afford to hire wet nurses. So if she doesn't want a nurse, then yes, she can tell her husband, Oila imai, I go up with you. And therefore, since in your family, they don't nurse, they hire wet nurses, then you have to do that for me. Amar Rav Huna Maikra, so Rav Huna says, where is a pasuk where we see this idea expressed? Well, not really, it's an asmachta, but still, where's the pasuk that the asmachta is from? The pasuk says, after Avimelech kidnapped Sarah, Hashem sends him a dream that night and tells him, how dare you, v'hi be'ulas baal, she is married to a husband, which means the word be'ulas, redarshin ba'al yose shabal, she goes upward with the husband, v'loy b'ridase shabal, she doesn't go downward with the husband. Now, so Marsha says, what the point is, first of all, because a few psukim later, Hashem tells Avimelech, return her to her husband, because she's an ashes ish. So that would be the expected expression, she's an ashes ish. Where's this expression, ba'ulas ba'al? Therefore, the Gemara sees that it's available for a drasha. And furthermore, says Marsha, it seems, if you look at the psukim over there, it seems at that point that Avraham had lost some of his assets. We see that shortly after that, we say that when Avimelech returned Sarah, that he also gave Avimelech cattle and sheep and so forth, implying that Avraham didn't have as much as he had before. So therefore, so Hashem tells Avimelech, so what do you think? Because Avraham has gone down in status, because he's lost some of his money, therefore you might be entitled to keep Sarah as a shifcha because she goes downward in status with him. No, don't think that. You have to return her to him. She never goes down with him. She only goes up. So that's why we dash in from that pasuk. Rabbi Loza says you have a different source in a pasuk earlier by Adam and Chava. It describes Chava ki hi hoisa em kol choy. She was the mother of all living people. Meaning, and what's the expression? Em kol choy l'chaim nitna v'lo l'tzar nitna. She's given to be with her husband for life, meaning for pleasure, for going upward in what she receives and in social status and all. V'lo l'tzar nitna. She's not given for tzar, meaning it would be a tsar for her to abandon the kind of lifestyle that she was used to until now and have to go downward, and therefore you can't put that on her. Marsha says, you also. Now what you have is, so before the Chet Eitz Hadas, she's called Isha. Now after the Chet Eitz Hadas, you would think that, listen, you know, Adam went down in status. He was cursed because of the Chet Eitz Hadas, which she convinced him to eat from the fruit. So you would think that maybe she should be tuffle to him and she should be cursed even more. And the answer is that no, there were the specific things that she was, that Hashem told her that she's going to have to have the pains of labor and pregnancy and so on and so forth. But nevertheless, in terms of other than that, she's called Chava al Shem L'chaim Nitna, meaning even to begin with, Hashem planned before even the Chet Eitz Hadas that she's going to go only upward with him, not downward, and therefore ki hi hoisa, she was, meaning she's always been em kol chay, and even now that Adam is going downward, then she doesn't go along with him. So that's another source for this idea of oila ima v'eni yeredes ima. So therefore, so that's the answer. So if she comes, so whether she comes from a family where they don't nurse, instead they hire wet nurses, or whether he comes from such a family, either way, if she doesn't want a nurse, then there's no requiring her to do that. Now, we said in the Mishnah, we started describing in the Mishnah that if she brought in a shifcha into the marriage, meaning, for example, so she had michsim lug that she brought into the marriage, or michsit son barzel for that matter, and among them is one shifcha, one maidservant, then she's now exempt from three of the jobs that she would have otherwise had to do. The Mishnah listed altogether seven jobs that she has to do. So now when she has one shifcha, then she gets out of three of the first three of those jobs. She no longer has to grind the grain or supervise the grinding, as we talk about on New Testament days. She doesn't have to bake and she doesn't have to do the laundry. She can have the shifcha do those. So the Gemara says, Hosha'ara Avda. Now, so the implication is she still has to do all the other jobs. The question is why? But Tamalei, why can't she tell him, Ailas loch itza bacharikoi? Can't she say, look, in effect, I brought you another wife instead of me? Rashi says the word charikoi can have two meanings. One, it means instead of me, and the other one, it means to make up my lacking. Either way, the point is, in other words, she can say, listen, beforehand, I would have had to do all the seven jobs that are mentioned in the Mishnah. Now that there's a shifcha, let her do all seven jobs. Why should I have to do any of them? And the answer is, the answer is mishum do omar la, because the husband can answer her. Ha torcha l'diyo l'da. Okay, so this shifcha will do the jobs for me and for herself. She has to do things. She has to cook food and do laundry and so forth for herself. Kamididoch man torach. Who's going to do the work for you? So after all, in other words, now we have more people. We have three people instead of two. Therefore, he can tell her that she still has things to do. Tosfos, by the way, wonders, I mean, how is the husband gaining so much? How would the husband consider this a gain anyway? After all, when there's a shifcha there, it means that he's responsible for feeding the shifcha. So then he's not exactly gaining from this. So the Tosfos HaRosh says that's true, but nevertheless, the fact is a person would generally rather have that kind of thing, that he has a shifcha who's available for various jobs, especially ones that his wife might not be, so therefore he doesn't mind supporting her. So in that case, so the shifcha will be doing three of the jobs mentioned in the Mishnah, the woman will be doing the other four. Mind you, the truth is the Rambam, when he lists this halacha, he says altogether there are 11 things, because the Mishnah didn't list certain things. The Mishnah didn't mention, first of all, the Mishnah didn't mention three things, which we're going to talk about in the Gemara shortly, which specifically a woman does for her husband as an expression of affection, namely making the bed as in putting the sheets on it, giving him water to wash his face, hands, and feet, and pouring and serving him a cup. So those three, the Mishnah didn't list. Those she's always going to do. And also there's the producing wool, as we talked about the other day, spinning So the Mishnah had only listed, so actually the Mishnah had listed the making the bed, but Tosfos explains over there that there's a difference between the making the bed mentioned in the Mishnah, which means putting out the pillows and mattresses and whatnot, which is a big tircha, versus putting on the sheet, which is much more simple and which is much more an expression of affection. So altogether that I'm, and there's also the Mishnah didn't list that a husband can have his wife do different small errands around the house, like to bring something from point A to point B in the house, that kind of thing. So the Mishnah didn't list everything. So the Rambam summarizes it that as there are more shvachos, then she gets out of more jobs, as we're going to say here in the Gemara, but there's always going to remain a couple of things that she, or that the wife herself always does, as we're going to see as we continue on in the Gemara. Next, the Mishnah says shtayim, if she brings in two shvachos, so besides the first three jobs that she got out of, einam avashelas ve'einam nikav fuller, then she doesn't have to cook and she doesn't have to nurse the baby. Then she can have the shivcha nurse the baby. So now she's gotten out of five jobs, b'chola. So again, hosha'ora avda. So the implication is that the other jobs mentioned in the Mishnah, she still needs to do. Well, the question is why? But Tamalei, now at this point, can't she tell him, Ailas loch itzat achariti. Now I've brought in another wife. So one of them will do the work on behalf of me and her, and the other one will do for you and for her. So in other words, now we've covered everything. Why should I have to do any of the housework anymore? And the answer is, Mishum da'om Allah, because the husband can answer her back, sure, but you have to consider also, there are the various guests that come. Who's going to do the work on behalf of them? Urchi, the difference is that urchi means guests who stay for a few days or a week or whatever. It actually says a week or a month. Perchi literally means ones that flutter through. So it means people who just pass through, for example, Mefarshim explained, like let's say, for example, peddlers who only stay like for one meal or for one night or whatever, and then they leave. The point is, Rashi says, as the household is growing, more people are going to come for achnasas urchim. So therefore, you have more people. So therefore, you're still going to need the wife to be doing some of the jobs around the house. Which, by the way, we're going to talk about on Omid Beis. We're going to say that the wife is required to serve her husband by the table, but not to serve his family members. Whereas over here, we're saying she even has to serve guests. So the Rashba explains the difference is we're talking about, are they eating by his table? If you have, for example, let's say he has children who are living on their own, or parents who are living on their own or whatever, she's not required to go over there and serve them. But if they're all eating at his table, then yes, she is. And therefore that would include the guests that we're talking about over here. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, Sholosh Eina Matzas Hamita, we said once she brings in three shvachas, then she doesn't have to make the bed either. And then she doesn't have to, the Mishnah continued, that she doesn't have to anymore make the bed, which again, Tosfos said that meant the kind of making beds that includes putting out the mattresses and the pillowcases and the pillows and whatever. It doesn't mean making the bed as in putting on the sheets, which is more a matter of chiba, more a matter of affection between the husband and the wife, and that she's going to do regardless. So she said, the Mishnah had said, if she has three shvachas, she doesn't have to put out the pillows and the mattresses, and she also doesn't have to produce wool anymore. So again, hosha ora avda. So by now, with three shvachas, by the way, the Shita Mekubetzes explains that for the same reason that the Gemara was saying, because as the household is growing, there's more jobs to do because there's more guests, that's the same reason also. Why is it that one shivcha gets her out of three jobs and two and three shvachas, that the second and the third, each get her out of only two jobs? For the same reason as the Gemara is saying, because as you have more people in the household, then you have more jobs to do. Okay. So now when there's three shvachas, her sha'ara avda, so by now she's out of seven jobs, but the implication is that there are still things that she does around the house. So v'teimalei, why? Can't she say, I've brought you in another shivcha, so one of them will do work on behalf of her and you, another one on behalf of herself and me, the third one will take care of the guests. What do you need me to yet do? And the answer is, Mishum da'om Allah, the answer is the husband can tell her, the more people in the household, the more guests you have, so therefore it's always going to get more and more. Well, the Gemara asks, well, in that case, Mishnah had said that if she has four shvachas, then she doesn't have to do anything. Then she can just sit in an easy chair and not have to do any of the work around the house. Now, why? Based on the logic we just said, if there's four shvachas, then there's also going to be more guests. So it should always be that it scales up. And the answer is arba kibin and afishi lahu, because once you have four shvachas, there's so many already, messiah and adadi, therefore they can help one another with the household jobs. So therefore it comes out that once you reach that point, even though there are more guests, nevertheless, there's very little for the wife to do, and therefore she can just take it easy. And the Gemara says, Amar Abchana v'itamer Rav Shmuel ben Nachmani, so Abchana, or some say Rav Shmuel ben Nachmani says, lo hichnisa lo mamash. When we say that she brought into the marriage one shivcha or two or three or four, doesn't actually mean that she brought them in, doesn't mean that we actually have those shvachas standing there right now. Ela kiven shiru'uya lahachnis, it means even if she's able to bring them in, which means Rashi says she had a large nedunya, she had a large dowry that she brought into the marriage, so therefore some of that can be used to buy shvachas. Or other Rishonim say, if she comes from a family where they generally have shvachas, like we said before. Even if she hasn't actually brought in shvachas, but the fact that she brought in that amount of money, or the fact that she comes from such a family, means therefore that she would now be exempt from these various from these various housework jobs. And Tana, we learn in a brisa, it also, it doesn't matter whether she actually brought in assets to the marriage, or there could also be where she saved up gradually from the money that was available for her. Meaning, Tosfa says, so let's say, for example, there are certain things, besides we talked about the husband has to support her, and besides we talked about the other day, the ma'ashal kesef, the small amount of pocket money that he gives her for occasional spending, for example, to go to the bathhouse or do laundry or whatever, there's also, for example, he has to give her cosmetics. So now, let's say she might save up gradually from that, use less of it than she needs to, and over time she saved up money that's enough to be able to buy some shvachas. Tosfos brings a different gear, so also shematza loy mishaloy, not simtzma, but shematza loy mishaloy, which means that she realized that she finds that he has enough money that he could be able to be buying shvachas. Anyway, in that case also, in those cases also, we say that she's entitled to have those shvachas and therefore to be exempt from various household jobs. Okay, next, we said in the Mishnah, Arba Yeshevis B'Katedra, we said once she has four shvachas, then she considered an easy chair. We don't require her to do any of the household jobs anymore. But Amar of Yitzchak B'Chanani, Amar of Huna, Afa Pisha Amru Yeshevis B'Katedra, even though the Chachamim said in our Mishnah that she can just sit in an easy chair, that doesn't mean that she doesn't do anything at all. Avon mezegas leitois, still she pours him a cup, which includes mezegas means to pour, but it also means to mix water into the wine, as they used to do in those days, and to serve it to him. Umatsas leis hamita, and makes his bed, which again means spreading out the sheets on it. Umachetzas leiponav yodavaraglov, and washes or provides water for washing his face, hands, and feet. Now Rashi says, these are not things that involve such tircha. These are, on the other hand, things that involve chiba, that show affection. This way, when she does those, he will be more affectionate towards her. So now, Rashi says, the Chachamim are not, we're not saying that she has to do these things. If she has four shvachas, she's entitled to not do these things. However, the Chachamim are recommending that it would still be a good idea that she does that so that her husband continues to have affection for her. Tosfos, on the other hand, earlier in the Masechta, learns that she'd actually be required to, and the Rambam learns the same way. So in this connection, since we're talking about these malachas, and we're saying that they bring to a closer feeling of affection between husband and wife, so in the same vein, Amar Rav Yitzchak bar Chananya, Amar Rav Huna, kol malachas sho isha oisa labayla, all the jobs around the house that a woman does for her husband, as we've been describing so far, nida oisa labayla, a nida also does them for her husband, chutz mim zigas hakois v'atzas hamita v'achotzas ponav yodav v'raglo. Except for these three things, since these are davka things that usually a wife does personally for her husband, and that leads to greater affection between them, it shows that she's affectionate towards her husband and is doing those, and in turn that causes her husband to love her more. So now, during the time of Nidda, there's concern that that's going to bring them to a closeness that they shouldn't be having at that time. So therefore, those three, she can't be doing. And when we say that one of them is making the bed, so Rabbi says that's only when the husband himself is present in the room. But if he's not in the room, then there's no problem. Then making the bed is not something that's going to lead to such closeness and such affection between them. And as far as mezigas hakois, as far as pouring him, serving him a cup. So the Gemara says you can do it in a different way than usual. Shmuel, during the time when his wife was Nida, then she would change things, and instead of handing him the cup in her right hand, she would hand it to him with her left hand, or not actually hand it to him. So now Tosfos actually brings that Rashi was careful, not just as far as a cup, as we're saying here in the Gemara, but anything. He wouldn't even pass a key from hand to hand between him and his wife. So now Tosfos discusses, our Gemara doesn't necessarily bear that out, because our Gemara is talking about a cup of wine or some other drink. That's more a matter of chiba. A key, for example, is not necessarily a matter of chiba. Nevertheless, Tosfos goes on to discuss that there may be sources for it in other places in Gemara. In practice, that is how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, that a husband and wife are not allowed to directly pass each other anything when she's nida, even whether it's a cup, or whether it's even something unimportant like a key. One of them has to put it down and the other one has to pick it up. And there are various reasons for it, one of them being that they might accidentally touch each other while they're doing it. Although the Shach says that even if it's a long thing where there's no possibility, one of them is holding one end, the other the other, they're far apart. Nevertheless, we still make that hachokah. So these are among the various harchakas. There's a siman in Shulchan Aruch that deals with these dinim of harchakas, of what's allowed and not allowed between a husband and wife during the time of her nidus. And among them is this business about not handing something from one to the other, where Tosfos is telling us that was initiated by Rashi. So now Shmuel, when his wife would pour, the poskim talk about exactly other than that. So if you're not handing something directly, so what exactly is it that's also in terms of pouring a cup? Is it the pouring that's the problem? Is it the putting it on the table in front of him that's the problem? So now we're saying that if it's done with a shinui, for example, she puts it down in front of him with her left hand, then it's not a problem, because then it shows, then it helps remind them that she's a nida right now, and therefore they don't get to be inappropriately close. The Shach mentions in that connection, by the way, that by the same token would also apply to a wife serving her husband, like, for example, putting down a plate of food in front of him, you would have the same problem. That would be, in effect, the same as putting down a cup. So therefore, that also, she can't put it down directly in front of him. And the Gemara continues, Abaya manchale apuma dekuva. Abaya, when his wife was nida and she would pour him a cup of wine, instead of putting it directly in front of him, she would put it on top of the barrel. And then Abaya would go and get it from there. Rava, Abay Sadia, and similarly, Rava's wife would put it on the pillow next to him rather than directly in front of him. So such things are allowed because she's not handing it directly to him, and she's doing it in such a way that there's a shinui, so therefore it will remind them that she's nidda and not to do anything that they shouldn't be doing at that time. And Rav Papa, Shar Shifa, Rav Papa's wife would put it for him on a bench. So such things where there's a shinui are allowed. As far as, by the way, the hachotzas pon of yod v'raglov, the Ramban points out, we don't mean actually taking with her hands and washing his face, hands, and feet. There's no question she can't do that when she's a nida. You don't need the Gemara to be telling us that. They're not allowed to touch each other physically. So therefore, it has to mean drawing water for that purpose to give him to wash his face, hands, and feet. Even that would be also while she's a nida. Again, because of the idea that brings to a closer affection between them, and doing nida is a time to develop other parts of their relationship, not the physical part. Okay. Since we mentioned a din that Rabbi Yitzchak bar Hananya said in the name of Rav Huna about these three things that a woman does for her husband, so now the Gemara brings another din that the same Rabbi Yitzchak bar Hananya says in the name of Rav Huna, even though it's not directly related to anything we were talking about before. So Amar Rav Yitzchak bar Hananya, Amar Rav Huna, Hakol Mashin b'fnei Hashamash. When you have a waiter serving by your table, you can wait to serve him. So now he needs to eat as well. But with most foods, you can wait to give him his portion of food until everybody else has finished eating. So you save him some of the food and he can eat it afterwards. Chutz mi bosav yayim, with the exception of meat and wine. Because those kinds of things, they have a strong aroma, and therefore he's going to have a tremendous taiva for them, and it's going to make him feel really it's going to make him have a tremendous taiva for them and a tremendous tsar if he can't eat them. So Amar Rav Chista specifically, Boser Shomen v'Yayin Yashin. We don't just mean any meat and any wine. Rav Chista says it means fat meat and old wine. Omar Rava, and Rava says, Boser Shomen Kol Hashana, the fat meat that would apply throughout the year. You always have to give some of it to the waiter first. Yayin Yashin, B'Tkufas Tamuz, but old wine, that would only apply during the summertime, because then the aroma of it is stronger. The rest of the year, if he smells it, it won't bother him that much. Omer of Onan Bat Chalifa. So in this connection, of Onan Bat Chalifa says, "Haba ka'imna kamei de Mar Shmuel." I was one time standing as a Talmud, or as a waiter, in front of Mar Shmuel. Va'aisulei tavshila de Audi. They brought him a cooked dish of mushrooms. The ilab de yoivli, and if he hadn't given me some right on the spot, istakni, I would have been in danger because I would have had such a taiva for it that I would have gotten sick if I couldn't have some of it. And similarly, Omer Rav Ashi, have a ke'imna kamei de Rav Kahana. Similarly, Rav Ashi says, I was standing in front of my Rebbe, Rav Kahana, but I saw like gargulidi the lift of a challah. They brought him slices of turnips in vinegar. The ilav de yoivli, and if Rav Kahana had not given me some of them, istakni, same thing, I would have been in danger because of the taiva that I had for it. And the Gemara continues, Rav Papa Amar for the tamauta de hinunisa. Rav Papa says it applies even, for example, to a fat date. They are also, if a person is being served fat, juicy dates, then you have to offer some of it to anyone who's there, to the waiter or to the Talmud or whatever, because otherwise his taiva for it might be too much for him. And different other Rishonim discuss different possibilities. What Hinunisa means, one of them is that it means actually the opposite. It means an unripe date, which has a certain acidic taste to it. So the Gemara says, "Klal of the mil." So the general rule is, "Kol de islay recha be islay kiyuha." Any kind of food that has an aroma, that has a strong aroma, or that has a sharpness to it, for example, a vinegary sharpness to it, those are the kinds of food where if you don't serve them to somebody, if you don't give a little bit of it to somebody who's there, then they could be endangered because they're going to have such a taiva for it, they could get sick if that taiva is not fulfilled. So the Gemara tells some examples in this connection. Avua ba'ihi or minyamin ba'ihi. There were two of the chachamim, Avua ba'ihi and minyamin ba'ihi. The Pashtus, I guess they were brothers. Anyway, Chad Safi Mekol Mina Umina, one of them, when he was being served by a waiter, he would offer the waiter a little bit of all of every kind of food that was being served at the table. V'chad Safi Mechad Mina, the other one would serve him only one particular thing at the beginning, and then he'd tell him the rest of it, you have to wait until the end, until everybody else has finished eating. The result was Mar Mishtoy Eliyahu Ba'day, or Mar Lemishtoy Eliyahu Ba'day. So the first one, Eliyahu, I know he would talk with him because he was doing good. Because when, like this, as the various courses are being served, so and sometimes, especially, there are a lot of guests, so it might be quite a while before the waiter gets to eat, and he's going to feel tsar, so therefore, Eliyahu HaNavi appreciated the first one of them, that he doesn't do that, that he gives the waiter right at the beginning a little of each thing to eat, and therefore he showed his appreciation by talking with one of these brothers who did that. Umar l'mishtoy Eliyahu Ba'day, as opposed to the other one, Eliyahu would not talk with him because he's not doing things in the best possible way. Sure, he's giving one of the things to the waiter, but what about all the rest of them? What does Eliyahu HaNavi have to do with it? Marashur explains, we know that at one point Eliyahu went for 40 days without eating and drinking. We have the story over there, it's an Aftodah, Parshas Pinchas, where he's running away from Izebel. He goes all the way to Har Sinai, and before that, he's given special food by a malach, which gives him the strength to keep on going for 40 days straight. So now that means, therefore, when you give the waiter each of the kinds of food, then in effect, what you're saying is, look at that. A regular person wouldn't be able to go even a short amount of time without food. Every kind of food they have a taiva for, and they have tzair if they don't have it. Therefore, that highlights the nest with Eliyahu all the more so. So the one who did that, then Eliyahu would talk with him to show that he appreciates. Like with what you're doing, you're highlighting the greatness of the nest that I experienced. And Maharam Shift gives a different point also. He says, we find a little bit earlier in the story of Eliyahu, when he's staying by the Isha Tsarfasis, the woman from Tsarfas. So he asks her first for a little bit of water and then for a little bit of food. And she tells him, I'm almost out of food. He says, it's fine, go bake a loaf of bread, but give me some of it first. And he promises her that her flour and her oil won't run out until the drought is over. So therefore, Eliyahu was asking for food first before she even served herself. Therefore, the one over here who served his waiter beforehand was acting like Eliyahu did, and therefore and showing that what Eliyahu did was the right thing to do, and therefore Eliyahu showed his appreciation by speaking with him. The other one not. Similarly, the Gemara says, Hanu Tautin Chassidi, there were these two Chassidim, So according to the first version, according to this version, they're not named. But Amrila Ramori Rav Pinchas Bnei Rav Chista. Another version is they are named. They're Ramori and Rav Pinchas, the sons of Rav Chista. Mar Kodim Sapi. One would give the waiter his food first before he even serves him. He would give the waiter his portion. Or Mar Ma'acher Sapi, and the other one would give it to the waiter only after each course had been served to him and to his guests. Then he would have the waiter take his portion. Same thing. My mishtoya, the old day, or my the kodim sapi, the one who offered the food beforehand, aliyo mishtoya by day, then aliyo would speak with him. The ma'achar sapi, the one who gave it later, lo mishtoya the old day, then aliyo would not. Same idea. These dinim, by the way, are brought in Shulchan Aruch. There's a simon in Shulchan Aruch, in Hilchas Sudas, in Kuf Samach Tes, that deals with these dinim and about what you're supposed to do as far as giving the waiter a little bit of the food. And based on our Gemara over here, that you should give him a little bit of it first, and that you should give him each kind of min, rather than having to make him wait until after everything has been served. And the Magen Avraham talks about over there, maybe if to begin with, when you first hired the person, you told him that you're going to do it differently, then maybe that's different. Maybe we're talking about over here only when you didn't tell him in advance you're going to do that. But even then, it says that it's still better to follow the procedures that it says here in the Gemara. Okay, in this connection, going back to this matter of that when a person smells food that's really tasty, or that has, as we said, has a good aroma or has a sharpness to it, if they don't eat from it right away, they're going to be in danger. So the Gemara tells a story in this connection. These three Amiroim, Amema, Mazutra, and Ravashi, were all sitting by the entrance of the palace of King Izgur. Izgur, or is the name of a king of Persia. In other places, the Gemara is called Izgadar. So as they were sitting over there, Cholif v'Ozo Aturnega Nemalka, as they were sitting over there, the king's waiter carrying the king's food passed by, and the food smelled very good. Chazir Rav Ashi the Mazutra the Chovar. So Rav Ashi saw Mazutra turn pale because of this, the taiva for the food. Shokol ba'etzba'ase, so Rav Ashi took a little bit with his finger, anachle b'pume, and put a little bit of it in Marzutra's mouth in order to calm his cravings. Which, by the way, Marsha points out, based on later on in the Gemara, the food wasn't necessarily kosher, but after all, Mazutra's life was in danger. What he did is, though, he didn't actually give him an actual piece of the food, which then you have, as the Gemara says elsewhere, that tzaddikim, Hashem makes sure that they won't eat something chafed. Here it was just, he had like a taste of it just placed on his tongue. That was enough to calm his cravings, though. And that's not really considered eating in halach. Amalei, but the waiter was very angry. He says, "Afsadta l'sudas ha'demalka, you've ruined the king's meal. What do you mean putting your finger into it?" Amrulei, so now the king's soldiers said to Rav Ashi, "Amai tevenochi, what do you think you're doing?" Amalehu, so Rav Ashi said to them, "Man de ovid hochi, you should know that anyone who makes that kind of food, then he's making food that's not fit for the king. It's not fitting that the king should eat food prepared by such a person." They said, "Why? What's the matter with the food?" He says, "Dover acher chazoyde, because I saw dover acher." Now, usually the word dover acher means chazir, and that's how Rashi explains it over here. It means it was a chazir which, in addition, has tzaras. So there are certain breeds of pigs that have spots all over their bodies which resemble tzaras. Marsha says, "Come on, I mean, King Izgur or Izgadar, whatever you pronounce his name, was a goy. He can eat chazir. There's no problem with that." So therefore, Marsha says that it means that only that Rav Ashi is saying, "I noticed that there's tzaras on the meat. So therefore, that's not something suitable to serve the king." There is, by the way, a thing in Reb Levi Yitzchak, the Rebbe's father, in connection with a different explanation about a different story in the Gemara involving this Izgadar Malka, mentions briefly this story, and he mentions the gematria of the name Izgadar, as he's called in other places, is the same as the gematria of the word chazir, showing an association that he's eating chazir. So bodku v'loyashkechu. So he says, "Dover acher chazoy beis." I saw dover acher in it, as Rashi says, a chazoy that has tzaras, or as Marsha says, just that it has tzaras. Bodku v'loyashkechu. So they checked; they didn't find anything wrong with the food. shokolats ba'ase anachale. But then at that point, Rav Ashi took the waiters or the cook's finger and placed it on one particular piece of meat that was there. And he says to them, Hocha mi bad kitu, did you check this particular piece? Budgu, they checked that one, and a nest happened. Ashkechu, sure enough, they found that one was infected with tzaras. So this was a nest that happened. So therefore, Sarav Ash got out of trouble. So now, in other words, so like this, they accused him, you ruined the king's meal. So he's telling them it was already ruined. The cook, to begin with, was careless and put in there a piece. But it wasn't that there was actually anything wrong with that piece beforehand. Rather, a nest happened on the spot. So Omer Rabbanan, my time is Samchat Anisa. So the Chachamim asked Rav Ashi, how could you rely on a nest? How could you do that in the first place? Put your finger into it to put a little in Mazutra's mouth. The fact is, how could you rely on a nest that you're going to end up being vindicated? Omer Lahu, so he says to them, Chazoy Ruach Tzaras, Dekaporcha Ilavei, I saw a spirit of Tzaras hovering over Mazutra, and therefore I realized that his life is going to be in danger if I don't do this, and therefore I figured it's worth it to do that. It's worth it to put a little bit on my finger, even if that meant that I'm risking my own life, because I knew that a nest will happen in order to save my Zutra and in order to save me. So in this connection, the Gemara tells another story. Hahu Reima, there was a Roman, a goy, the Omelalahi Itza, he says to a certain woman, Minsvasli, will you marry me? The Gemara doesn't say whether she was a Jewish woman, but Pashtus, I guess we could assume she was a goita, but whatever, she didn't want to marry him. Amrele loy, she says no. So he wanted to force the issue. Ozo Aisiri money, he went and bought pomegranates, poli va'ochel kama, and he's cutting open the pomegranates and eating them in front of her. Now, pomegranates also are one of those things that have an aroma and have a sharpness to them. So therefore, she started developing a tremendous taiva for it. As she's standing over there, I guess we have to assume that he had her locked up or something. So as she's standing over there and she's salivating from this taiva for the food. So all the saliva that she was producing and that was bothering her, balate, she just swallowed it. She didn't want to spit in front of this guy. Veloy havla, and still he wasn't giving her any of the pomegranate. Ad bezogla, until she got to the point, her skin was becoming translucent. Her face and her stomach swelled up to the point because of retaining so much water from the saliva that they became, the zog literally means like glass. So they became swollen and they became like translucent, almost see-through. L'soif amala, eventually after torturing her enough, the goy says to her, imasinalach minsevesli, if I heal you, will you marry me? Amrele ein, and at this point she says yes. Also I see money. So now in order to cure her, he again brought the same thing. He again brought pomegranates. Poli v'ocho kama, and again he was slicing them and eating them in front of her. And again, of course, she would be salivating like before. But this time, Amalai tells her, kol mayit sari loch, all the saliva that you're producing, which is bothering you, tuf shadoi, spit it out and throw it out. That will cure you. So she did. Eventually, so much came out of her, so much saliva came out like a green palm leaf, that it to see us, and then she was cured. The point the Gemara is making with the story is you can see how badly this kind of type of food that you can't have can affect the person, and therefore you have to be careful about it and offer the waiter some, as we said, on Amud Aleph. We said in the Mishnah, va'oisa batzemer, we said that one of the jobs that a woman has to do around the house is to produce wool, for example, to spin wool. So the Gemara says, batzemer ein bepishtim loy. Now the implication is that wool, yes, but not linen. Now why is that? Masnisin mani, who would our Mishnah be like? Rabbi Yehuda. Our Mishnah would be like Rabbi Yehuda. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, the husband, even though his wife is required to serve him in the house to serve him food, he can't require her to serve his father or his son, meaning, as we said on Amud Aleph, the Rashba says when they're not eating at his table, he can't expect her to go to where they live or where they're eating and serve them. The loylit and tevin lifnei behemdoi, he also can't require her to put straw in front of his animals. Animals, for this purpose, Rashi says, means things like horses and donkeys. avo kofa lifin tevin lifnei bekaro, but he can require her to put straw in front of his cattle, which means his cows and bulls. Now, what's the difference? Rashi says like this. The first explanation is that horses and donkeys are very lusty animals. They're very into revere. They're very into mating. So when she serves them, then there's the concern they may try to mate with her. Therefore, he can't require her to go bring them their food. But on the other hand, when it comes to cattle, then they're quieter animals. They're not as lusty like that, and therefore there's less to be concerned about. Second of all, Rashi gives another explanation that Bekore and Behemto means respectively females and males. So therefore, in other words, so any male animal you wouldn't require her to serve to bring the food to, because again, any male animal, there's this concern about Revia. Female animals, there's no concern, therefore she would have to do that. Now, there are various other explanations in Girsos among Rishonim on that line. Tosfos has a Girsa that she's not required to do either. Not to give straw to Behemtoi or Bekore. She's not responsible to do either one, because both of them are degrading jobs that you can't expect her to do. Then there's a girsa. The Rambam has the girsa that she's required to give to Bekore, but not to Behemtoi. Actually, the Rambam, I think, has the same girsa as here, Behemtoi versus Bekore, but he explains the other way around, that it means that, for example, the horses and donkeys, which he actually rides on, Nosekeleman, that Rambam explained, the Rambam would say, ones that he rides on, those are more directly concerned with him, therefore she would have to give them their straw, as opposed to ones that are only used for farm work, such as the cattle, that not. And the Ritva brings the gears to the other way around, with the idea being the ones that are used for farm work are actually being used to produce food for the family. So you have a bunch of different gears source and a bunch of different explanations. Anyway, the Braisa continues. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Af Ene Koifa Lasis Pishta. Rabbi Yehuda says he also can't require her to spin flax. Mepnesha Pishta Masriya Chazapeh, because working with flax causes her breath to become bad. When you're spinning flax, so flax threads don't easily stick together as much as wool does. Therefore, she's constantly having to wet it with saliva from her mouth, and over time that causes her breath to be foul. Or meshavet, that's a sfasayim, and it causes her lips to get flattened and to stick out. They become like a shavet, like a pea pod. And again, the same idea, because she's constantly having to wet the thread. Shittim Kubetzis brings from Tamidu Rabbeinu Yonah another meaning of Meshavet, that it means it makes her lips chapped. And the Gemara says, V'hani milim kitna roimah, specifically that refers to Roman flax, Roman linen. So other kinds of linen, Tosfos says, yes, in other words, if the local minhag is that women spin linen instead of linen thread, instead of flax, then yes, she would be required to do that, because it's only Roman flax that has these qualities that causes her lips to get deformed and or chapped or whatever, and her breath to be bad. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, Rabbi Eliezer says that even if she brings in 100 shvachas, then she still has to. So we have two statements in the Mishnah. We had Rabbi Eliezer saying that even if she has 100 shvachas, she still has to produce wool. She still has to spin wool, because idleness leads to znus. If she's sitting there idle all the time in an easy chair, eventually she's going to come to be mezat. And then Reb Shimon Gamliel says, suppose that a husband makes a neder that his wife should be also to do work. Then if that goes on for too long, that's grounds for divorce. He's going to have to divorce her and give her huksuba, because sitting idle over there leads her to going crazy. So first of all, the Gemara says, Amr of Malkiya, Amr of Adaba Abba, Halacha Kerab Eliezer. The halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer, so therefore she's always going to have to be producing wool, even if she has many shvachas. And the Gemara says in this connection, Amr of Chanina Breda Rav Ikka. Now you have two Amroyim that are very similar names. You have Ramalki Yoi that we just said, and there's also Ramalki Yo. So how do you remember which one is which? So Rav Chanina Breda Rav Ikka says, Shvud, a din in Masechta Beitza, about if you use a spit to roast meat on Yom Tov, then afterwards the spit is muktzah, so you're not allowed to actually move it by hand, but you're allowed to sort of kick it over to the side of the room so it doesn't get in people's way. So that din, Also shvachos, the din of on Mishnah about that even if she has many shvachos, she still has to produce wool. The gumos and a din in Masechta Nida, that when we always talk about that if a man or a woman, if a boy or a girl develops shtei sairus, then they're considered an adult lahalofa. So there's a din there that it means not only if there are actual hairs, but even if there were only hair follicles. Gumos literally means pits. So it means the pits, the follicles in which hair grows. So all of those, Rav Malki Yoy, all of those dinim were said by Rav Malki Yoy. On the other hand, bloiris, a din as far as a bloiris is a lock of hair. The goyim in those times would grow a lock of hair on their heads in honor of their avodah zarah. So there's a din in Masechta Avodah Zarah that if a yid is giving a goy a haircut and he's reaching close to this bloiris, he has to stop cutting three etzbois away from it in order that he's not helping the goy leave his blotus in honor of Avodah Zarah. So that din. Ephraim Mikla, also a din involving ashes, which is in Masechta Makos, that if a person has a wound, he shouldn't rub ashes on it because then it makes a mark on the skin similar to a tattoo. And Ugvina, and a din also in Masechta Avodah Zarah, where it says over there that cheese made by goyim is osur, midrabanan, and the Gemara discusses their various reasons why. And one reason given over there is because they use chazer fat to smooth the surface of it. So those three dinim, the Malkiya, those three dinim were said by the Malkiya. So this way you won't mix them up. On the other hand, Rav Papa says no, masnissin or masnissa Rav Malkiya. Anything involving a din that's in a Mishnah or in a Braisa comes from a Malkiya. So that would be of the list that we had. Blotus comes from a Mishnah. Ephraim Mikla does not. It's an independent statement, not tied to a Mishnah or a Braisa. And Gvina is also tied to a Mishnah. Shmaitsa Rav Malkiya. Anything that's an independent statement of Amiroyim comes from a Malkiya. The simonach, and the way to remember that is the expression masnissa malkasa. The Mishnah is the queen, meaning when you have, after all, we have the Mishnah or a Braisa, when we have a statement of an Amora, which is contradicted by a Mishnah or a Braisa, so the Mishnah or the Braisa wins out, and we say then that the Amora has been schlugged up. So therefore, in that sense, the Mishnah is like a queen relative to statements of Amoraim. You have many, many places in Kabbalah and Siddur where it brings this point that Mishnah is on a higher level than Gemara. Gemara comes all the way down to Olam HaYetzirah. Mishnah is an Olam HaBriah or something like that. Whatever the point is, that Mishnah is on a higher level. So the Rav Malkiya, the name Malkiya with an aleph, is similar to the word Malkasa. So that helps you remember that. So that helps you remember that says Rav Papa that anything involving a Mishnah or a Braisa comes from a Malkiya. So the Gemara says my benayu. So what's the practical difference between Rav Papa's version and Rav Chanina Breda Rav Yekla's version? And the answer is Ikka benayu shvachos. The argument between them would be about the din of our Mishnah shvachos. Now this is a din from a Mishnah. So according to the Papa's version, that should be from a Malkiya. On the other hand, Rav Chanina Breda Rav Ikka attributed that to the Malkiya. So Tosfos says that there's two possibilities. That what it means is that Tosfos brings from the Rashbam that it means Shvachas is the second one in the first list. The corresponding one from the second list is Ephraim Mikla. So in other words, Rav Papa would be flipping those around. He would say that Rav Malki Yoy had said the dinim about Shvud and Ephraim Mikla and Gumos, and Rav Malki Yoy, or rather that would be Rav Malki Yoy, that he would have said those three, Shvud and Ephraim Mikla and Gumos. That would be Rav Malki Yoy, because none of those depend on a Mishnah or a Baisa. And the other three, Blotus, Shvachas, and Gvina would all be from Rav Malki Yoy. On the other hand, then Tosfos brings from a minute time that no, what he doesn't mean that it still remains three and three, like Rav Chanina Breda Rav Ikka said, it's rather two and four. Two of these statements come from Mishnayos or Braisos, so those are from a Malkiya. And as far as the independent statements of Amoraim, then some of them can also be from a Malkiya. So therefore, it doesn't have to be three and three, it would be two and four. Two from a Malkiya and four from a Malkiya. The Gemara says Reb Shimon Gamliel. We said Reb Shimon Gamliel says that if the husband makes a neder that his wife is not allowed to do malacha, then that's grounds for divorce because we said batolam aviyah the day shimum, being idle leads to going crazy. So the Gemara says Hainu Tanakama. isn't Reb Shimon Gamliel effectively saying the same thing as the Tanna Kamma, Reb Eliezer? Reb Eliezer had said that there's a problem with her being idle. Reb Shimon Gamliel is also saying there's a problem with her being idle. What's the practical difference? And the answer is ikabinayu, the nafkamina between them would be demetalia begraisa kitinaisa. If instead she's not just sitting idle, she's playing with little dogs or the nadushir, or that she's playing nadushir, which Rashi says means chess. The Aruch says means backgammon. Then, so as far as Reb Shimon Gamliel's point that batola mevila de shimon, that won't apply over here because she's not completely batol. She's doing something. She's playing with the dogs, or she's playing board games or whatever. Therefore, that wouldn't be grounds enough for divorce. On the other hand, according to Reb Eliezer's point that she's still required to produce wool, that would be a different point. Even if she's playing games, nevertheless, there's still the problem that can lead to zima, that can lead to znus. Which actually the Ritva points out that it may be that Reb Shimon Gamliel and Reb Eliezer are not even really arguing. It depends on the circumstances. When we're talking about that the husband wants her to still work, that he wants her to produce wool, then he can point out, you know what, if you don't, even if you're not going to go crazy just sitting there because you have shvachas to do your work for you, the fact is you're going to end up being drawn to znus because you have nothing productive to do. So you need to do something productive. On the other hand, when the husband is making a neder saying you are also to do malacha, then she has the right to say that if you don't allow me to do some kind of malacha, I'm going to go crazy. Even if I have games to play, it's still not enough to keep me busy. And therefore, that would be, as he says, would be grounds for her to for her to receive a get and to receive a ksuba. Okay.